The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
How are you? It is Friday, the 16th of April, 2021, and you're on the clock with Erin Green. On the clock, we engage organizations, institutions, social and cultural leaders, and ordinary people to better understand the impact of public policy, private sector development, and emerging social and consumer trends. On the clock, we have conversations that help us understand and navigate a rapidly changing Bahamas. Today's show is brought to you by the Department of Inland Revenue. I want to remind you of the Department of Inland Revenue's Real Property Tax Forgiveness Program. The offer is valid until May 31st, 2021. Please get online, read out how it applies to you. It's very important, Bahamas. Today's a bit of a somber day, even though it is Culture Friday. But I want to just make a quick note. Remember, guys, I said I had that interfaith prayer that I had been working on. And I think today is a day where we could open the show in prayer. Yesterday, we had a devastating event, the eastern end of the island, where 6 people were shot and killed, and at least 2 more injured. And this is devastating. Whether you are part of their immediate family or community or not, you know, this weighs heavy on our hearts and on our minds. And it's not just these people, you know, that I want to pray for. I want us to pray for, to remember in our prayers. Whenever you take the time to have your prayers, you know, the last couple of days, we've had a bird's eye view into the lives of some of the people who survived Dorian, the storm at the inquest. That too is devastating. And then we must remember our brothers and sisters in St. Vincent and the Grenadines, who are still going through a devastating volcanic cycle. The type of devastation we are not used to. Because even with the weight and the breadth of Dorian, even though it sat for days over Abaco and Grand Bahama, St. Vincent and the Grenadines and surrounding islands, it'll take years and years and years for them to recover. We're talking about 5 years for arable land be able to plant again to feed themselves. And so I would take a moment to remember all of these people. And if you will permit me, may God's grace pour over you. May the ancestors guide and protect you. And may the light of the universe sit and comfort you. Let's hold everyone close, whether in our hands or in our hearts, this weekend and going forward. I ain't gonna talk about gang culture, although there's plenty to talk about. We're talking about culture today. And so I wanna remind you of some other things. Have you been checking your soursop tree? I've been out to check my soursop tree and I find some amazing things in my soursop tree. I find 2 little soursop just hanging on for life, and I find a whole bird's nest sitting in my soursop tree. I had to have a conversation with the birds this morning. I said, look here, if y'all taking up rent, if y'all taking up room and board in my soursop tree, y'all gonna have to pay some rent. And the only rent I require of you is that you keep the bugs away from my soursop. Them birds look at me and say, cheep, cheep. I thought they were saying, okay. I realized when I walk away, they're saying, miss, you cheap. You cheap, you trying to hire a bird for security. But birds is good security, you know. You see, that's why we got to protect the eco balance, right? Like, it's Environment Month. That's why we got to focus on it. See, when I in my yard and the mosquitoes them biting me and I want to spray the pest control, I got to think about it. Because I have to think about how the pest control could impact my yard and me. Mm-hmm. It may stop the mosquitoes, but it may damage my plants.
Yeah.
Or it may kill the good bugs. See, I know y'all didn't know that. There's good bugs. These bugs is eat the bad bugs. But look here, all bugs are good, you know. They all have their purpose.
Yeah.
Even the mosquitoes who bite me when I'm trying to chill out in my yard, their purpose is to remind me to go to work. You sitting here resting, miss, like you ain't got to work. We depending on you.
That's real.
So let me remind you, in case you didn't know, it's vegetable time and it's fruit time, right? So if you haven't been in your tamarind tree, you got to get the tamarinds out of the tree before they start to mold. Tamarind ain't like other fruit. Tamarind just don't drop on the ground like that. You gotta pick the tamarind. So if you got a tamarind tree sitting there, hanging heavy with fruit, go pick it. Don't let the tamarind turn back on the tree. Don't let the rains come and get the tree moldy, get the tree wet and moldy. There's not enough sunlight to dry it out again. You let the tamarind waste on the tree. See, we don't pay attention to these things. It's like the coconut tree. Did you know the coconut tree, it get pregnant and it produce fruit? But you got to clean the tree. You got to take the fruit off so it could produce more fruit. When you let the coconuts sit up on the tree and they get too bunched up together, they begin to scar. But you weighing down the tree. You damaging the tree. The tree producing fruit for you. You got to clean the tree regularly. Get the coconut off so the tree could burst back with life and be as strong as it could be. Right? You got to pay attention to these things. You just give your coconut, but you don't want to take care of the coconut tree. We got to take care of these things. So, if you got a soursop tree, water it. Mm-hmm. Let me tell you why. Soursop like to be close to water. You see, if you're looking for sugar apple and soursop, go by the people them who live on the canals. They always have prolific production because the trees like to be on top of water. Mm-hmm. So if you got a soursop tree, now is the time to start watering it. If you got a scarlet plum tree, go water it, please. I need you to sell me some scarlet plum. This thing is a system and it go with sense.
Yeah.
Anyway, I didn't want to just start the show I wanted to start the show rightfully acknowledging the things that we should acknowledge.
Mm-hmm.
But also, we should not walk through this day with these heavy things weighing us down,
mm-hmm.
right? They should remind us and ground us so that we could reach to where we know we're supposed to be, right? So I tell you about the fruit. Go to your market, your farmer's market tomorrow. Support your local vendors.
That's right.
Support your... Now, if the people them selling on the side of the road, here's what you're going to do. You're going to get the proper paperwork.
Mm-hmm.
If you know what to do, whenever you stop them, you say, hey, Rasta, go to this office and get the paperwork. Don't let these boys harass you. I need to buy your peanut. Help them help you.
Yeah.
Right? So let me tell you what the real vibe is. You know why the Rastas them taking the risk to sell the fruit on the side of the road? Because tamarind could be selling for anywhere between $12 and $14 a pound on the side of the road. Right? That's how it weighs out.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they do it. It's a viable market. Once they ain't teething the fruit, once they are appropriately or adequately compensating the people they get the fruit from for the fruit, this thing is called trade.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
I believe in that.
So, as we go through the show, I'm going to give us, hopefully we can talk about a model that the Rastas and this fruit side, the roadside fruit vendors could use or that we could use to support them and to help ourselves get the local fruit that we so used to eating.
Mm-hmm.
I remember any time that fruit season, major intersection, Soldier Road, Prince Charles, Shirley Street, and Mackey Street, you could get your scarlet plum, your tamarind, your hog plum.
Right.
You could get these things.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, it is Culture Friday, people. It's time to get alive. My guest today, in studio, are members of a family business team. Now, the name of the business is Shell Tunes. Right? Got it correct.
Correct.
And like me, I'm excited to talk to them because these are, you know, one of the first set of people in a long time that are sort of doing what I'm doing with my little business.
Right.
And I'm so excited to talk about it because I think that we have models and examples and ideas in this conversation that are going to help people better navigate one of them.
Right.
look at the resources they have available to them and think about what they could do with them and realize an idea and achieve a goal.
Right.
And so I'm going to ask my guests to introduce themselves right now.
Hello, my name is Rochelle Noh.
Speak right into the mic for me, yeah.
And I'm the owner of Shelltones Creation and Keep It Lit. I also have a company that's Cardinaise. My daughter speak about that. And we also have a company called Go Nuts.
Wow. So the first thing I hear is keep it lit. Look here, what that is that a man security service? Do you all secure a man on the weekend? Right? Is that keep it lit? Is that what you all do? What this company is? What you all is do?
The Keep It Lit company is a candle company. And the name actually came from my son who's 12, Adam Knowles. He gave me the name. I had a name prior to that, and he told me, Mommy, that sounds too old. So he came up with the name, Keep It Lit.
So look here, yesterday on the show, I tell the audience, right, that I like having young people around me and talking to young people, and you see what it is do?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's a brilliant, that's a brilliant name. Something you expect to see on Cable Bahamas commercial and take.
Oh, come on
right?
Now.
Keep It Lit candles. That is awesome. So, the first question, you make jewelry, accessories, and candles. With just a brief glimpse of looking at your work, I see sea life and local flowers, straw, and even little Junkanoo fringe work in there. What inspired you to start this creative journey?
It was a couple years ago. I met this guy by the name of Tony Colebrook, and he brought this big fish tank of shells. And he asked me, what you gonna do with it?
Mm-hmm.
I never went to school. I never did nothing. I contacted BAIC. They told me what to do from there. I did the class, and that was it. So I was able to do the bag, the straw work, but you cannot just do basic. You also have to have a mind of creativity. That is the most important thing concerning being an artisan, and that's mm-hmm. what a lot of people don't consider.
You got to have that creative.
Yeah.
You got to have that creative base, right?
Right.
So tell me, I see the Bahamian-ness all throughout your, but I don't want to make any presumptions. Like, when you started this, what were you thinking? How do you preserve and grow Bahamian culture with your work?
What I do personally is I like to train persons. I do a lot of training. For the shell jewelry and the bag. So that's what keep me going. And I try to encourage the younger persons. They don't like to take the time to do it, but I feel that that's where the culture is going to die if our young persons don't get into this and make it as part of their life. And I'm not saying that you got to make it, how would I put it? Make it your lifestyle or your business, but know the trade, know where you come from, know how to use your items, what you pick up off the sand, and stuff like that.
Now to my other guests, please introduce yourself again.
Hello everyone, I'm Johnny Knowles. Like we said, the business is Shelltones Creations, but I branched off and I started a self-care business where I make soaps and other stuff like shower gels and body products.
Look how she in here shaming me. She must have heard the show talk about I don't like to bead. But I tell you what it is, right, is a part of it is I grew up using store-bought products.
Mm-hmm.
And quickly into my teens realized I don't really like them very much.
Yeah.
And so then I sort of branched into sort of a little higher-end body products.
Right.
We couldn't afford it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I bucked some people who make their own body products.
Wow.
And now I love to bathe. Now I love to bathe. Right? In fact, I make my own soap.
Right.
And I love to bathe.
Right.
So what I want to ask you, Janae, is this idea of preserving culture, right? What do you think the best way to keep these practices alive? You think if we put these skills in the school setting that young people would be excited about taking up that course? Like if we put conch shell cutting or not just straw platen, but straw platen and construction
mm-hmm.
in a course, you think young people would drive, you know, would head towards those sorts of courses?
Well, what I believe is you have to, well, personally for me, I didn't really want to do anything where I wasn't going to benefit from it at all.
Right.
So I feel that you should do it, if you introduce it in a way where they feel they can gain from it more, that they'd be more interested in it. Because plenty of young people do look at it in a way where they doing something, but they're not making money for it, or it's just like, it's just something there, like, you know?
Right. They don't see the practical economic benefit of it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So now what I've seen in the school system, though, right, mm-hmm. is that they have these agriculture programs.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And they're growing and they selling the produce.
Exactly.
And you could see the commitment to the program.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not saying that young people are just committed to money,
right.
but sort of an incentive to
right.
keep them,
push them and
keep long enough for them to begin to feel the benefits mm-hmm. and like the pride of it.
That's
and
true.
Thing. Do you think, get the question right here, do you think if the government gave scholarships specifically for this type of training post-high school, right? Like at a BTVI or BTVI-BAIC partnership,
mm-hmm.
that young people would be driven towards this type of work.
Right.
Yeah, I think that would be a very interesting thing because I didn't really, when I first started the business, I wasn't like, oh, soap, I'm going to make plenty of money. When I actually went to the class and learned how to do it, it was kind of therapeutic. So
yeah.
I found that even though I wanted something that to make money, I found that I actually enjoy doing it as well. Because, like, with my mom's work, she does the jewelry and stuff. I know how to do it. But it wasn't, like, it wasn't something I really yeah. something else that's way better for me. So if they introduce different things to the community, I'm pretty sure once people find something that's interesting for them to like, they'd try it.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Yeah, they would try it.
And if we just take the soap, if I could take the thing as an example, right?
Right.
Like
mm-hmm.
I say, I make soap as well. Like these small local products that we make, a lot of people are making soap.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people are making soap for a tourist market.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
A sort of a high-end soap
mm-hmm.
is very expensive. So I tell people, like, I don't make that type of soap. I just make vat soap. Soap so you could bathe every day and pay your cable bill.
That's right.
You're making soap for prom and wedding, right? And first day on the job. I on that run.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think Bahamians are prepared to support Bahamian craft industry, but like a functional industry, right? So making soap. Bahamians making the most beautiful soap,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
right?
Mm-hmm.
But the average Bahamian can't support you
mm-hmm.
because they can't buy that soap to bathe every day. You're ready now to have both an artisan, a high-end, pretty craft market, and not low-end, but a functional craft market where Bahamians are making and buying things for regular, everyday use. Like the soap is one thing,
mm-hmm.
the straw is another thing,
mm-hmm.
right? Do you think Bahamians are ready for that? And are you ready for that?
Well, the only problem I really have with trying to get the soap to be like really affordable would be that the prices to bring in items and the prices that the local people here sell the raw materials for.
Right.
So I can only base my prices based off of, you know, what I have access to. So certain soaps I see, they be like $8 and stuff. I know personally that I could sell it for $5, $6, or $7. I wouldn't overprice my soap just because I know people would buy the soap for that price.
Right.
So what I try to do is to be as affordable as I can, but in the same time where, like, I wouldn't make a loss.
Right.
I got you.
Yeah.
And so looking at that, right, what are some of the things that craftsmen and artisans on one side, and then let's call the functional craft, let's call them makers, right?
Mm-hmm.
What do, and include myself, what do we need from the government, or what would you ask the government for if you had a wish list to say, hey, I'm a young business person, I'm working, like, I got a model, I'm sustainable because I'm working with other people, but this is what I need from you right now to take my business, well, A, to make my business sustainable, and then B, to take it to the next level.
Okay, I can answer that one. I think the main thing that the government really honestly needs to work on is our shipping. The shipping is ridiculous for persons like myself and others to say do wholesale. Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous. So if our government could at least work on the shipment in the country for Bahamian artisans like ourselves to get our products internationally, that'll be a great help to us.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And so I get some ideas around barriers, right, mm-hmm. to product, to sustainable business. Right. But let's get to that space, right? Like the creating a mechanism or a vehicle to efficiently move Bahamian products into an international market, mm-hmm. right? Are we looking at maybe we have a consular office in Washington,
right.
D.C.?
Right.
Are we looking at a shop space
mm-hmm.
connected to the consular office
mm-hmm.
where authentic certified Bahamian products are on display
mm-hmm.
and then vendors can order from that point?
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Or
ship
even
in there.
Even something like how they have a way on Amazon. The government can have this big building like an Amazon building and artisans can have their work there. Persons order online. They automatically ship out, even something like that.
A consolidated
Correct.
Shipping center for,
yes.
right,
yes.
The structure. So I do know, I'm going to ask if you are participating, but I do know, I think it's a small business development center is creating a space, I think on Gladstone Road, where vendors that are part of their program can access storage space, dry storage, cold storage, and freezer storage. Are you working with have you ever worked with the SBDC, or do you know any new or young vendors that are working with the SBDC?
No. Mm-mm.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. But so there is this space, right? And we
yeah.
do have a model, something that started. We see how that works. And maybe that storage space
mm-hmm.
could add an additional element, right, where they send of goods
right.
from registered vendors
right. mm-hmm.
to registered buyers
okay.
internationally.
That sounds good.
I like it. I
mm-hmm.
like it. All right, so let me ask you a question. What was your first product and why did you diversify?
My first product was jewelry and straw bags. But, you know, even sometimes if that don't sell, I think all artisans should have something else to sell.
Yeah.
So that's what I did. We all have a lot of gifts and talents in us. I think you should gravitate on all of them and don't be picky and choosy, but pull in all of them that if one sell, one don't sell, you still can make that money at the end of the day.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, like I said, when I saw your work, I see a lot of coral,
mm-hmm.
a lot of shells, a lot of even seeds, right?
Yeah.
How much of your raw material are you able to source locally? And that goes for the soap side as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, with my jewelry and my bag, a lot of them, I would say 80% of them that I get locally. That's from my son. My pink son comes from Eleuthera, from my mother-in-law, Mary Knowles. I get those. And some mm-hmm. shells I get come in from her as well. My straw comes from either Long Island, Care Island. So most of it, 80% of it is local. The only thing that I would really have to order is beads and
yeah.
the snaps for the bags.
All
yeah.
right. Are you sourcing them yourself, like the coral, the seeds and the things like that, the sand, or
mm-hmm.
are you working with other vendors and other business people
mm-hmm.
who have committed to provide, you know, their business is providing the raw material for artisans?
Yes. Well, the coconut pieces, I rely on a young lady by the name of Pippa. So I get all coconut pieces from her, everything I get from Pippa. So that's my girl. Let me blow her up.
Well, it's a good thing I know Pippa.
Yeah, that's for girls.
But
she gets me straight.
Right, and it is not fly by night. This is a young lady who has been working in the coconut craft world.
Yeah, she's the best.
I think over a decade, eh?
The mm-hmm. best.
Easily.
The best. The best. That's
easily.
All. Yeah.
That's awesome. That's
mm-hmm.
awesome. I see my producer's not here, so I'm going to have to ask you all a bunch of other questions, right?
Okay.
And I got a question from my young friend over here.
Okay.
How do you balance the creative side of your work with the business and administrative sides of your work?
Now, I'm not going to lie. Starting off, it was really a struggle because I'm new to the whole business side of things. I've never really taken any business courses. So what I had to learn is that I got see what my stock looked like, figure out if I'm actually making a profit or not. So I'd have to compare my prices to what I bought my products for. And then on the business side, there's also social media. Sometimes I find it a struggle to keep up with my social media platform. And not only because of the business, but simply because I'm also doing schooling. So I try to post. I try to post and, like, be interactive with my customers because, you know, that draw them in.
Yeah.
Especially when they see you post new products or you show, like, a little video or you mixing the soap or cutting the soap. They love that. And they find it, like, personally, when I post my soap cutting videos, they get good much views and likes, and they say the soap look like food, and that brings in customers. Like, I've had people come to my page before even, and they'd be like, oh, I thought this was food, but tell me about your soaps. Yeah. So the business side of things, it can be hard to keep up with it sometimes, but it's worth it, and you have to loss. I'm not going to lie. Sometimes I do get behind with the keeping everything, like, at a certain level in the store because it's hard work having a small business.
Yeah.
So it's hard to keep, say, every time I make soap, I try to make, like, 3 batches of each soap. And by the time as the soap then sell, you got 2 more soap on the shelf. And you got to find the time to work. And you have to really put time and effort into it because it's a struggle.
You wake in with your family.
Yeah.
And you got a little brother who is obviously brilliant. How are you going to rope him in to supporting your the business?
Now, my younger brother, I really let him help with packaging the soap sometimes. And he's often like the videographer. Like he records my videos and stuff, because, yeah, you know, my hands can't hold the camera and everything.
Yeah.
So he helps me with that part of it a lot. And he enjoys it, really.
Yeah.
So I remember he helped me cut soap before, and he was like, so I'm getting paid $1 a soap, right? And I was like, okay.
You see, when I did reading the bios, I realized it was a family business. The first question I wanted to ask is this a house of creatives, or is somebody running up in here, right? And we need some activists. But the truth is that family-operated businesses can be the most sustainable, right, model.
Right.
Certainly to start a business or to start a family of businesses, right? And often in our culture, we that's abhorrent, right? Like, I don't wait for my family, right? But when you look at, like, when we look at the U.S. and we look at the success, some of the business success stories in the U.S., right? In particular, we see migrant families, right? To get into the U.S. as an immigrant, if you could buy a business, right? If you could start a business, it's an easy path into the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And what people do is they come in with their family, like their immediate family and maybe some extended members, and they start the business. And those family members that come in, with, you know, on the citizenship path or on the residency path, they work in the business.
That's right.
Right? And to support the business. And then what you see in some cultures, what they'll do is, I bring in my family and we work and we get to a certain economic level of stability. Then I'm going to sponsor another family member.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I bring them in and they work in my business.
Mm-hmm.
And then they work until they can afford to put down 20% stake in their own business.
Correct.
And then I give them 80% of the stake. Right? They start their business and they pay me out until we hit 80-20 where they own 80% of their business.
Correct.
Right? But you can't do that sort of outside the family, a family type structure
or
a culture that operates like that, where family operates together. So I think that if we are willing to shift our culture or our cultural perspective on how family works, then we could have some real sustainable models.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say that, this little bougie old me from Nassau, forgetting that people all over this country have been operating these models for decades and decades and decades. Mm-hmm. So my young friend, tell me, do you appreciate working in this sort of model? Do you get support from the other family members? Like, hey, I need some help with the bookkeeping, or I couldn't quite figure this out. Can you help? Is that helpful? Does that work for you?
Well, I would say that my family does support me a lot. In particular, my uncle, he really helped me start off the soap business. Mm-hmm. Because we really started in, like, the beginning of COVID. And he was like, here, take this money, use this for whatever. And then we was like, oh, Javon Wilson.
So, Oatman said, thank you very much for sponsoring a young Bahamian and starting something new.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he doesn't know anything about soap.
Except he liked the bed.
Except he liked the bed. Right. But when he realized what we were doing, he was like, I could support this. This makes sense.
Yes.
So he is the one, he got us sorted out with our first soap molds. He got us started with, you know, anything about labeling.
Yeah.
He did all of that for us. He even started our advertisements for us. Because, like I said, I find it hard to keep up with that sometimes.
Yeah.
He started all of that, and it was a really great, it still is a really great help for us. Other family members, they're not really into the soap business, but I can't say that they do support me. I've had many of my cousins and aunts come in and buy products from me and advertise for me as well. So that's another way that the business has gotten out there. They support me by advertising.
Right.
Yeah.
See, because if it was me, like I say, I sell soap. I used to sell soap. Mm-hmm. And now I just bathe with most of it, right? But, you know, when I was selling soap, if I find my family member on the road and they ain't buying no soap from me, in the road, you don't like the bathing. You ain't coming for the soaping.
I like that.
But look, that's the type of marketing you get. Put on some people.
Yeah, that's true.
That's awesome. You know, I sort of want to highlight this thing you made me think of. You know, I think it's important for families. Mm-hmm. When you see young people in your family and they have a skill, or you think they have a skill, mm-hmm. like when you see them when they're on their phone, and you're on your phone all day, and who you talking to?
That's right.
Who you texting? You're texting Marzi. What you did just now is you identified a potential skill set.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And so I would say to the older people, you look at that young person, you say, look here, you want to make a little bit of money?
That's true.
I got something I need to get done. Right? And you may not they may not necessarily come to work for you, but you may be inspiring in them. Right? This idea that I do have skills mm-hmm. that can be useful to my family or to people outside my family or
That's
outside
right.
myself.
That's right.
Right? And how can I get this going? I also love this sort of family model because young people are in this transitional space where you're not 1,000% in control of yourself.
Right.
Right? There are obviously decisions you have to make for yourself. Mm-hmm. There are choices only you could make for yourself, but then there are things that you cannot do on your own,
correct.
Right? You could make a little money, but you can't make enough money to support yourself.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. And models like these allow young people to transition into adulthood, mm-hmm. right? While gaining some skills and a degree of authority, right? That they may not necessarily be able to exercise or develop in the home with no work, right? But the stability of knowing that, look, I could focus on my schoolwork when it's time to focus on my schoolwork.
Right, mm-hmm. right.
Right? Because the people here are going to say, look here, no social media. I'll do the social media.
That's true.
You
that's
just true. Books and me just chat, right?
Yeah, that's
that
true.
Kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And with the culture that we do have, because we sort of have this culture, adults, where we tell young people this thing. If you want to be grown, go get your own house mm-hmm. to be grown mm-hmm. in, right? But authority don't really work like that. Because these young people have a degree of authority.
Mm-hmm.
And they need to learn how to exercise and operate in that authority within a larger authoritative structure.
Correct.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Because you're not the boss of me. Well, it's a little bit.
Yeah.
They are bosses.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You have to be boss enough to carry yourself and govern yourself.
Carry your weight.
And these sorts of business models allowing young people a space to work in them, mm-hmm. and a safe space because it's family, right? Mm-hmm. Really can help with positive youth, personal development, creative development, mm-hmm. all the thing. Mm-hmm. All the thing.
That's true.
Kermit, let's go to a break. I got about 75 more questions for these people, but I got to let them breathe. I'm troubling this young woman hard in here, and I'm about to challenge her on a commercial battle, a creative battle. These young people think they're creative, but they ain't as creative as me. So we will be right back after this break. Stay tuned to 96.9 FM.
Have an outstanding real property tax bill? Take advantage of our real property tax forgiveness program. Bring your account to zero and receive a 50% discount on your outstanding tax and surcharge past 180 days. Or get a payment plan. Make a 25% deposit on your outstanding tax, receive a 100% waiver on the surcharge, and pay the difference within 36 months, interest-free. Contact the Department of Inland Revenue at 225-5778 or email us at rptforgive@bahamas.gov.bs. Offer ends May 31st.
Girl, Junior just showed me Bala Boy in his phone.
What you mean? He take picture of that good-for-nothing boy?
Shh, you don't want Bella hair, you say that. You know she always say that's my good child.
So what he doing in Junior phone?
Oh, he there because the police looking for him. He on that wanted list.
Wanted persons in your phone now?
Yes, child. And when police won't find anybody quick, after something happened, they can send picture direct to your phone. Go to Google Play or App Store and search for Crack Crime Bahamas, then pick install and it will go straight to your phone.
There is also a section on missing persons.
Yes, girl. Everybody needs to get this app so police can tell us right away when these people go missing, just like an alert system.
Yes, it has numbers for Crime Stoppers Bahamas, so you can call and nobody knows you. Call directly to Miami and give the information without giving your name or anything about you. I tried the other day, and when I hear Junior and his boys talking about where they have, walk quick round the corner and call that number.
Call 328-8477 from Nassau or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands.
For the past 33 years, Great Commission Ministries has been defending the poor and hurting, feeding the hungry, and sheltering the homeless. We invite you to support our Live to Give program and make a difference in these challenging times. Become a donor by giving a one-time annual gift or a monthly donation of $50 or $100. Call Great Commission Ministries at 325-5801 for more details. Or visit our headquarters at 237 Wolf Road. Join Live to Give today. This public service announcement is proudly sponsored by this radio station.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
Good morning. You are on the clock with Erin Green. It is Friday, the 16th of April, 2021. Remember, we're streaming live audio and video on guardiantalkradio.com. You can listen in on TV on Cable Bahamas Channel 969 or Flow Channel 612. And I would like to report that the static on Channel 969 has cleared up. This is great news. Or you can download the Guardian Radio app for your Apple or Android smart devices. And listen to our audio feed or watch us on our video feed right there on the Guardian Radio app. Or you can text us on the Guardian Radio text line at 422-4796. 422-4796, and that's powered by BTC. Or you could call us at 323-6232, 325-4316, or 325-4259. That's 325-4259. Now, just before we get back into the show, I have a quick advertisement, right? Come down to the Dungalik Farmers Market. Season has started. Saturdays, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Number 20, Village Road. We're featuring locally grown produce, fresh baked breads, teas, infused salts, jams and jellies, soaps and body scrubs, local craft and jewelry. Remember, buy Bahamian, buy Bahamian. Thank you very much. And now, before we get back to the show, ladies, I have a text here, and the text says, duty and VAT on packaging make pricing very high for local producers. There should be a way for people to recycle glass products like the tomato sauce people do. Dear Texter, thank you very, very much. Listen, shouldn't there be? Already is. I mean, this is so easy. I don't want to give away anybody's idea. Like, if you had this idea and I start talking about it right now, it's not because I knew it was your idea, right? Mm-hmm. But do you know how easy it is to set up recycling stations, right? And to set up a recycling protocol. Mm. There are lots of things we could be recycling and upcycling, right? Mm-hmm. And it's a whole business. So I want to say to these little young people out there, if you're sitting down on the blocks trying to think about what you could do, right? Here's an idea. Mm-hmm. Salvage, recycling, upcycling, right? Mm-hmm. It's tomato season. We're almost at the end of tomato season. So you got a whole year to prepare.
That's right.
The people who make in tomato sauce and bottled tomato need bottles.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. And you know, even in my business with the candle line, that's what I tell persons to do. Bring your bottle, bring your container back, and you get a different scent.
Yeah. In fact, I would take it one further. Y'all don't know when I start making vat candles. let me tell you why, right? Because this is another instance. And I really came at it because I'm an anti-imperialist, anti-capitalist, intersectional advocate, right?
Right.
And I say to myself, everybody in Nassau making these beautiful high-end... Somebody light a candle, I almost fall in love with the man standing next to me. That's how nice the candle was, right? Mm. But we live in a town with an energy crisis. Right. And a large proportion of Bahamians cannot afford electricity. But we don't have one company making candles for everyday people and everyday use.
That's right.
And that's when I realized that it's the tourist imagination, right? It's the tourism imagination that's driving production and industry in this country. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not going to tell you, my friend, Ms. Knowles, to stop making pretty candle. Mm-hmm. I ain't going to never tell you to stop doing that. Mm-hmm. But what I would say is that when you are stable in your pretty candle market, explore a lower end
correct,
candle market.
Correct.
And because here's why. It's a model, you know. They're young people, y'all listen. And they're old people. If you're listening, you better find 5 young people to put on your team.
That's true.
Because when you make that candle for that everyday to just make the candle, you're going to make candle holders. You're going to make eco-friendly, fire retardant, candle holders, because we know the problem is the untamed or controlled candle that accidentally starts the fire. Right?
Correct.
So now we got industry going. You ain't just making pretty candles, you making functional candles, and you making the functional set to protect people who have to use candles.
On an everyday basis.
Right, on an everyday basis. And so the same like with the recycling of the jars, right? Why aren't we recycling large jars? So I know some people who sell some fancy water and glass jars right now. Mm-hmm. I would put it in the jar so that the flame never gets out of, is never up above it, right?
Right, right.
And tons of these jars are available.
Mm-hmm.
But I realize that young people don't necessarily have the time or the energy to think about these things.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I love this model, because you have older generations who have been doing it or have some experience, and then you have that may have the energy or creativity.
That's it.
And we bring all of these things together.
That's
and
it
bada
right
bing,
there.
Bada boom. Now, you had a third business partner.
Yes.
Who was supposed to come and talk about, a new, because I was going to ask you, so what is next on the slate, and how do you come up with the next idea?
See, okay, that'll be my son. He's not here. That's Dale Knowles, Carson Knowles. He's doing the line Go Nuts. And with the nut line, we're going to be branding our own butter, peanut butter, almond butter, stuff like that. And also, we're going to be doing different type of breads.
All right.
Yeah.
Now, you're going to be making fancy bread, or you can be making the bread I could feed my children with every day.
The bread you could feed your children with, because we're trying to, right now, trying to eat healthy is expensive, so we are trying to borderline prices where it could be more reasonable for us who want to be eating healthy, but do not want to spend a lot of money.
Right. Right. Now, do you think, like, if all of these businesses were standalone businesses, do you think you would be able to operate the same level of success? Or is the collaboration model the secret to the sustainability of this mechanism?
What I have planned for my children is that same model that you mentioned earlier, 80-20.
Yeah.
I really want to do that aspect concerning them that they can branch out to themselves. I'm only more or less a helpmate concerning the companies, but as they get older and they want to branch on their own, I do not have a problem with that.
All right. Yeah. But plus, you could be busy teaching.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if you know it, but when I become prime minister, right,
we'll see.
It can get a little communist up in here.
But see, one of the problems was I wanted to teach it in the school, my craft work.
Yeah.
But they said that I would have to go in school to be a teacher. And I said, why?
Right. Why couldn't you come in as a modular? Why can't come in as a modular thing?
And teach my craft to other Bahamians. See, it's dying out. Right now, we don't have younger generations to even plait straw. Most of them plaiting straw are in the 70s and the 80s. Who was going to plait it after them?
Yeah. And look here. I don't think you're, like, so when I was in high school, and I did home economics, right? And everybody had to make a skirt. I'd make shorts. I'd, like, run around and said, make shorts, right? And at that time, I would never have thought I wanted to make clothes.
Right.
And now, the thing I regret the most out of my whole school career is not learning how to sew properly in that home economics class. And so when I look around, when I travel and I see my favorite plait of all the plait, and I can be honest, I don't even remember where it come from. So if it don't come from Andrus or Acklands, don't be mad at me. It's the telephone plait.
Okay.
Right? And every time I see the telephone plait, I wonder, what are we doing in this town? We're not just preserving it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now I know the people who know the technique have it. But why are we not ensuring that any young child or any Bahamian could go into a space and learn that plait, or any tourists? Well, see, this is the thing. I just catch myself. I don't know if I want a tourist to have the same access to that skill base.
No,
see, that was my
right
tourism
there.
Mind.
Yeah.
That was my tourism mind speaking and not my culture mind speaking, right? But why don't we have a space where any Bahamian could go in and pay a small fee and learn one of these skills?
Mm-hmm.
Now, young Miss Knowles, how are you going to do that? How are you going to set that up? Well, you could do that by getting your friends together and sitting down with them and telling them, look here, I have an idea that doesn't seem like much now.
Well, actually, I've had a few friends who already asked me about learning how to make soap. So it isn't, like I said, once you find something that the young people are interested in or you show them that it could be beneficial, they're all for it, because I told them right now one half the time, but in the summer when school is closed, I don't mind showing them how to make a log of soap or two.
Yeah.
So you just have to find people, you have to make it interesting. Like when people see the fancy colors and the swirling and the mixing, it's be like, okay, making money and it look cool.
Let me tell you when they really gonna get it. Sometimes people just look at me and say, she thinks she's special. Like, look at her walking around here. Like, you know, like she could go anywhere and do anything.
Oh.
Let me tell you what has made me feel like that. I learn how to make soap. And I live in a house. I live in a house where I know there will always be soap, but not just any soap. High-end soap. And not high-end because it is expensive, you know, but high-end because of the quality of the products in it.
That's
right. I bathe with my dollar soap and feel like those people who bathe with their $100 fancy soap.
Yeah.
And but that sense of agency, right? Like if we can give our young people that sense of confidence that I have a child and I know I could go out every day and take care of that child's needs.
Mm-hmm.
I could make the soap from the recycled waste oil, from the glycerin that they produce as a byproduct from the recycled waste oil. I could get the coconut, grate the coconut, press the coconut, get the coconut oil and make the soap myself.
Right.
And same thing in the agriculture space. That young man that knows that he could go on the juju tree and pick a load of juju, mash them up, take out the seed, and make applesauce for his baby and his sister baby and his boy baby, have more confidence that the young man who can pick up that AK-47 and go around the town.
Mm-hmm.
This is proven.
Yeah, that's true.
And so we celebrate any model. We highlight and celebrate any model that can provide a path for not just young people, because I'm a little, you know, biased with the young people right now, but mm-hmm. for any Bahamian in their own country with their own resources,
yes, natural resources
to create right their there. Own product and create their own market to sell it in. Mm-hmm. Ladies, we are out of time. I didn't yes. even get to my question about festivals and how maybe the new inter-island cruise model right. may be the perfect space to highlight local craft and artisan products.
Needs to be the only.
And how we need to have another conversation about authentic certification of Bahamian-made products to be sold in the Bahamas and abroad. Thank you so much, Shell Tunes. Fortunately, call you, ma'am.
Yes.
I gather in cultural experts right now, and
okay.
I would like to say thank you to Cultural Experience Productions for providing another round of experienced, fascinating, creative, and willing to share their expertise.
Yes,
to build this conversation and to build Culture Friday.
Thank you for having me.
Ms. Knowles and Ms. Knowles, it is lit, right? And it is lit until I go home and bathe with my vat soap so I can bathe every day and pay my cable bill.
That's right.
Look what these young people doing today.
Yeah.
Anyway, to my texter, thank you very much. I'm glad that you enjoyed the show. And I really appreciate being here amongst my Guardian family. I want to say thank you to Kermit, the best producer in the West, except for Arlington, who we can share that with. I love them both. It's been a wonderful day, ladies. And stay tuned to 96.9 FM because Lee Van Miller and Unleashed is up next.